Pop quiz. Which full-flavored beer is brewed just for St. Louis and under 100 calories? Want the answer? Then head to the store and look for the beer with the St. Louis arch on it, Bud Select. Brewed for the Lou.
This is the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Now back to Frank Cusimano on 590 The Fan, 105.7 HD2 FM, and InsideSTL.com.
When I wake up in the morning, love, and the sunlight hurts my eyes, and something without warning, love, bears heavy on my mind, then I look at you, and the world's all right.
Welcome back. Hollywood Casino Press Box on the all-new 590 The Fan. Frank Cusimano with you till 12 o'clock. The Hall of Famer Rick Hummel a little bit later. Dave Matter talking Mizzou sports also. But we are broadcasting live from Whitmore Country Club. It's the site of the 13th annual CBC Alumni Open. They've raised over $3 million over the years. And I want to talk to right now the winningest high school soccer coach in the United States of America, Terry Mickler. Coach, honored to have you on the program. How are you, sir?
Frank, always my pleasure to speak with you. Thank you again.
So give me an idea on your passion level. I believe this is year 47 or 48.
47, Frank, 47.
47. How about your interest and passion for coaching now in year 47 as opposed to year one?
Oh, it's different. I think it's more refined for sure. I mean, it's still there. There's still a fire to do it. I just do it probably, I like to think, maybe a little more sophisticated than in the past. You know, I like a lot of old coaches would like to go back probably and apologize to the guys we had earlier for the way we ran them. But as you learn as you go, you know. So, no, I still have that desire. Every day is another challenge. Every team is another challenge to improve and maximize, and every game is an opportunity to see how well you're doing.
Yeah, I imagine in the old days, because we didn't know any better, every coach, football, basketball, base, they didn't give water breaks. And I imagine you had them working out in the hot sun and didn't give them water breaks 45 years ago.
Oh, gosh. I remember playing high school football here at CBC, and we'd put some lemon slices and aluminum in our helmet to sneak a squeeze from a lemon once in a while. Water was taboo for sure. So, no, you know, that along with many other things have changed over the years. And if you don't change with it, well, you fall behind it and you struggle. So you always got to accommodate, you know, with what's current and still maintain standards though along the way. That's the challenge, is to find that balance.
You're approaching some magical numbers. I mean, is year 50 the goal? Is 1,000 victories the goal? You're approaching 950 wins now. What's your future look like?
Oh, you know what? It's one day at a time and one breath at a time, one game at a time, one practice at a time. Now, I never did have an end in sight. So, you know, those numbers are interesting and nice, but I remember Ebby Dunn from St. Louis U High retired, I think, at 492. You know, Ebby, a few more games and you got 500. No, he knew when he was finished, you know, and he walked away from it as a proud man with a great success record. So I don't have those kinds of targets. My target is every next day.
What about the kids? Sometimes I hear from some coaches who've been at it for a long time, and they say the kids really aren't that much different, but the parents are.
Yeah, you hit a live wire there for sure. No, you know what? Kids still want to play the game. They've gotten a lot more sophisticated in some ways about the games, all games considered. But still, there's areas that they still need to be coached and brought up to speed. And parents have the best interests of their kids at heart. But sometimes, you know, you can't throw all parents into the same sack here, because there's some really, really great parents that understand. And then there's some that are a little bit driven a little bit too much. But I work with the kids. You know, that's the primary focus for me, is to get what I can out of the kids. If you treat the kid right, I think the parent will appreciate that.
And do you set ground rules with parents at the beginning of a season? Do they know what the story is right away?
Well, we've started that here at CBC in the last few years now. We just had our parent meeting last week. But I think more in my case, just the tradition of being around for so long, and people kind of have an understanding coming in, you know, how it works and what I do and stuff. So I don't really have a formal meeting, but again, I think word gets through, word of mouth spreads through the grapevine.
One of the things that you did years ago to evolve and to take your coaching to the next level was to go out of the country and pick up a strategy and a style that you've brought back to St. Louis, to Town and Country. Tell our listening audience about that.
Yeah, I've been interested in Dutch soccer since 1974. I started here at CBC in 1971. So it goes way back. But in 1997, I actually had an opportunity to go to Holland for 10 days. I spent 10 days in country in Holland at the KNVB, which is the highest soccer federation, the only soccer federation in the country. And it was involved in a 10-day coaching course with a total of 10 coaches. So it was very, very hands-on. And what I brought back was their idea, their methodology of how they approach soccer. Tiny country. You know, I always say it's like the size of a postage stamp. Basically, it's the size of the state of Missouri physically. But what they do with their soccer year in and year out is they continue to produce high-quality teams, talented players, and good coaches. They have a soccer education system that starts and values coaching education and then works down through the ranks to where it's player education. And what they do is they try and make the game as simple as possible. And what I find here is that we tend to want to complicate it so much and make it more difficult than it needs to be. You know, it's a simple game. It's a game of opposites. I'm trying to score, you're trying to prevent me. You know, that's basically the nature of sport. But how you go about it is interesting. But it always comes down to execution. You know, can you perform what you need to do at the right time, under pressure, and get the right outcome? That's the challenge. And that's where the repetition comes in. And I think from a coaching point of view, for me, the most important thing is to have a critical eye, to know what needs to be improved, you know, what's good, what can be better, what will make it work. And, you know, when you get all those ingredients working together, then you're on the road to success. Then you hope you get your fair share of breaks along the way. But it was an eye-opening experience for me, and I've been trying to share it in every way that I can since I've been back. And there's a decent following of people that are interested in learning and following the Dutch approach.
We're talking with the winningest high school soccer coach in the history of our country, Terry Mickler at CBC. With the proliferation of club teams and select teams, the importance of high school sports in some way has been diminished. But I think your sport has really taken the biggest hit because in basketball, when they have all these summer teams, they still play a high school basketball season. In baseball, all these select teams, the Gamers and the Prospects, they still play for their high school baseball team. But in soccer, because of these academy teams, some are now not playing high school soccer. Now, I understand, though, at CBC recently, you've gotten some good news that five players have returned from the academy to play for you. Tell me about that.
Yeah, it's true. Well, a few years back now, the academy, U.S. Soccer mandated that if a player chose to play academy, that choice also involved not playing high school. Prior to that, they had the opportunity to play both. They could play high school and academy at the same time. But U.S. Soccer mandated that choice would no longer exist, and that once a player chose to play academy, they withdrew their opportunity to play high school. Last year and the year before, I got one player back each of the last 2 years, key players, A.J. Palazzola 2 years ago and Connor Linero last year, and this year now we got five players back. I think what the kids coming back realize is that, boy, the high school experiences is something special. You know, nothing against club ball, but what the high school represents, you represent everybody that's in your school, that's been to your school, that knows your school. I mean, there's a lot of appeal for high school soccer. There's a lot of enthusiasm, a lot of energy. And kids appreciate that, and they feel a real big part of that. And no offense to the academy, and I always take the position that I feel for the kid that has to be put in a position to make that choice. It's not really a fair thing to do, make that kid make that choice. A high school experience is something that everybody should be able to have and enjoy. It's a lifetime memory.
Yeah, Terry, for example, have you gone to an academy game before, by the way?
Sure.
Okay. How many people are at an academy game as opposed to how many people would be at CBC versus Chaminade for the Metro Catholic Conference regular season title?
Yeah, well, I can tell you, I know a few years ago, Scott Gallagher had a team, and I had a couple of kids that were on it that played for the championship of the academy, the final game at the end of the year, and they played in Texas. And I saw the box score of the game, and they had attendance listed at like 200 people. About that same time, we played for the state championship game at the soccer park against St. Louis U High, and we had 5,500 people. You know, so
wow.
And I know a couple of years ago, two years ago, we played Collinsville in the championship at a CYC final at the soccer park on field 5, and the academy teams were playing the Chicago team on field 1, and field 5 was overflowing with people, and the people at the academy were sprinkled here and there. So, the high school just draws. There's a magnet for high school sports because it brings in your whole student population.
No doubt about it. All right, before we let you go, let's say 2 or 3 years from now, you are coaching your last game at CBC, and one of your former players is up in the stands, and he's got his son with him. And his son says to the dad, "Who is that guy? What would you want the dad to say about you?"
He's an old guy that's been around a long time, coached a lot of guys like me. And that's a good question. I have the best interest of the kids at heart. I really do. I love the game. I got a passion for the game. I love the fact that the players that play for me allow me to be myself and help them in their pursuit of becoming a good player, and that they appreciate the fact that I'm trying to help them in the best way that I can.
Good stuff. Honored to have you on, Coach. Continued success. Can't wait to see another state title from CBC. 8 and counting for Terry Meckler. Thanks so much for your time, sir.
Frank, always a pleasure. Appreciate it. Have a great day. Thanks.
That is the great Terry Meckler joining us on the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Brian, let's go through a couple of these texts because we had a lot of topics out there early. And what's jumping out at you, young man?
From the 314, bring up the kid pitchers. Let's see what we have. Mi Lupita and Baldwin is an excellent family-run place, is the 314.
All right.
The Angry Cabbie, who I believe is a friend of one Chris Gardner, says that Larry Wilson was the toughest player I ever saw play. He intercepted a pass once in a game with cast on both hands because he had two broken wrists.
Yeah, there is video of that. Number 8, Larry Wilson, Hall of Fame, 17th round draft choice for the football Cardinals. He actually played a game with two casts on his hands. That's a great selection by the Angry Cabbie.
The Prodigal saying that Las Fuentes on North Lindbergh and Florissant is the best Mexican restaurant in town. The fajita selection is too good. He orders the fajitas Las Fuentes and the seafood fajita. The margaritas go along as well. The Prodigal.
Oh, how do you spell that?
Fuentes, Fuentes.
All right, I'm going to have to check that out. The Prodigal looks like a guy who's had some food in his day, so he may know a little bit about how to eat good Mexican food. What else there?
Before I call Kamish, somebody is adding that Parkway Central beating North was impressive. Colts running back was hurt, and their defense was stellar, and special teams were great, too. Colts are legit, and somebody adding that that Anquan Boldin retired yesterday.
Yeah, that did surprise me about Parkway Central beating North. North is they're loaded. They're led by maybe the best college prospect in the area in Michael Thompson, the defensive tackle / offensive tackle. But, boy, you got to give Mark Goldenberg a lot of credit over at Parkway Central. He always has great teams. He's one of the best coaches in town, and so is Bob Bunton. That seems like that should have been a conference championship matchup as opposed to the first week of the season matchup, but that is very impressive. What also is very impressive is winning streak. If you're looking for a place for uniforms for your select teams, for your grade school teams, your high school teams, your college teams, we recommend Winning Streak. They have a plant in Dupo, Illinois, and they'll come to your practice, then they'll bring it back to Dupo and make them, then they'll bring them back to you. So it's really one-stop shopping. Go to their website. We send high schools, colleges, private businesses there. Everybody just gushes about the service of Winning Streak. All right, let's welcome to the program the Hall of Famer, Rick Hummel. Rick, great to be with you. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, sir. How are you?
Very good. Okay, you're going to have to explain this to me and our listening audience. We're aware of this 40-man roster situation. Now, what would be the problem in bringing up a Jack Flaherty and having him start Mike Leake's next start in terms of the 40-man roster issue?
Well, Flaherty's a guy that hasn't been in pro ball long enough that you have to protect him from the draft in December, the draft of minor league players. So that generally, unless a guy is really ready to go to the big leagues, you try to not bring up anybody before you don't have to protect him. So if you bring him up to there, they have 40 players on their roster now, their winter roster. And if you put him on there, you have to take somebody off. Now, they can do that, but then you have to go, this person has to go through waivers, and you might lose them if you try to outride them to the minor leagues. So I don't know if they have any fluff on their roster they consider that they might be able to do that with. But I would concur that they need to do something here. I don't think Leake is buried for the whole year, but I think skipping him for a start would make perfect sense.
And would Flaherty be the guy?
He's pitching tonight, so he'd be on proper rest with a day off. Leake's start wouldn't come till Saturday. That's 4 days from now. Let's see how long. I bet Flaherty is not instructed to go very long tonight, maybe five innings, just in case they do want to bring him up on Saturday.
If it's not Flaherty, who else would make sense?
Well, Gant is on the 40-man roster, who was up earlier and was actually quite good in the spring. So that's a possibility. Dakota Hudson is yesterday, but he's not on the 40-man roster either. That is not as advanced as Flaherty. Myers, I don't think that's going to happen. He does translate well to the big league thing here. He pitched in relief last night and got knocked around again for Memphis. So those are the possibilities, really. You're already down one with Wainwright out to go with Weaver on Wednesday. It's hard to put two new guys in the rotation at this time of the year, but they're going to have to do it for one turnaround.
And if we're not talking about improving the starting staff, what about the bullpen? Is there another arm down there that would make sense to add to this bullpen, which is really overworked and ineffective lately?
Well, they were actually very effective the last two nights when they got so far behind. They were spotless. When they're behind, they get knocked around when they're ahead. They allowed no runs yesterday. I think they have allowed no runs the day before, other than Lucas allowing a run on Saturday. So Gant could come up. He came up earlier in the season. He might be a guy you'd bring up. He's got big league experience and has actually started and relieved both in the big league. So that'd be probably the guy. Ryan Sheriff is a left-hander that they have in Memphis, but I think they're looking for a guy who might be able to pitch more innings. So Gant would probably translate into that role since Weaver is going to be starting, so they don't have their long reliever anymore right now.
I know every time we feel that it's starting to flip away, they come back. But now 3.5 after yesterday's walk-off for Chicago and a disappointing loss for the Cardinals, do you feel it's starting to slip away or you think they're still okay?
Both. It's starting to slip away, but they're okay in the fact that 20 of the next 22 games and 26 out of 31 are against teams with losing records. There's a whole lot of one of the great mysteries of this thing is they're playing San Diego starting tomorrow night seven times in about a two-week span. They haven't played them at all. And San Diego's got about six, seven rookies that are playing every day. Nobody knows anything about them. So you don't know if that's going to be easy or hard or what. They're all new, and they might decide whether the Cardinals make it or not. But they have San Diego. They have the Giants, who have not played very well. They have a lot of Cincinnati and Pittsburgh coming up again, and they have Tampa, which is coming in this weekend, which is now a losing record team. So they have only two games with the Brewers next week and then three with the Cubs about 2 weeks after that in this stretch of 20 out of 22 of losing records. And they have done pretty well against teams with losing records. It's a team with the winning records that have had trouble beating.
Does Piscotty stay with the team, and does Luke Voit go down?
That's what I would do. I think Voit needs to play every day for a while and sharpen him up for when you bring him back on a possible stretch run here. You have four regular outfielders, and that's up to Mike Matheny to find the right time to play each guy. I mean, there are certainly guys that Randall Grichuk struggles with. You could get him out and out of the lineup. Maybe Fowler will need a day off with his back or whatever might be bothering him. And Pham got a day off yesterday, so there's a way to do that. There's no other DH games to be had for them, though, like they've had before. They've played all 10 of those on the road. So that's just up to Mike to do. But Piscotty doesn't need to go back down to Memphis. He succeeded down there. He had four home runs in seven games, and he had two or three doubles in those games. And he had two hits last night and hit another ball hard, so he's ready.
Tommy Pham probably needed a day off. He's been playing. But would you anticipate Pham every day in left, Fowler almost every day in center, and more of a Piscotty-Grichuk platoon in right?
I guess to simplify it, yes. But I think there's still ways to get Fowler and Pham more rest, too, where you could play Grichuk in center and Piscotty in right, or Pham in center and take Fowler out. You have to keep Piscotty sharp if you're going to bring him up. Now, Grichuk has been used to sitting on the bench and coming back in, so maybe he'll get the least time of the three that have been playing the most lately, yeah.
Moving forward with Pham, if this does continue and he has the final 6 weeks like he has his entire season and he finishes as your best player in 2017, do you think the Cardinals would give him a couple of years at a little better money, or they won't do that? What do you think?
I don't think they'll do it until they have to. This is 1 year for him now. This isn't like he's had two or three years like this. This is one. And he's never spent an entire season in the big league yet. So they do value him highly because he brings not only the physical skills, but he brings an attitude. You know, you see how hard he works and how hard he plays, and that has to rub off a little bit. Now, maybe that's hard to sustain for 6 months. I don't know. He's never been in the big leagues for 6 months. But I like that kind of player, and so do they. But you don't have to get crazy and start lavishing a long-term contract on him just yet.
Yeah, of course, you could argue they kind of did that with Piscotty, who had a bad second half last year, so he had a decent season and a half, and they gave him $33
million. Yeah, and he's a lot younger than Pham, too. So
yeah.
I guess they have to decide, is Pham going to be here? Is he our long-term answer in the outfield? And I don't know if you can answer that. He's certainly been the best short-term answer this year, no question about it. But this is 1 year now. If I was management, I would certainly like to hang on to him and play him as a regular player, but if he had another year like this next year, then we'd be talking about this, I think.
Well, they'd be a really good team next year if they got some star stud third baseman, Manny Machado, and they got to put Jerko in that platoon role again. I mean, they'd be an awesome team if Jed Jerko was in a platoon role, wouldn't they?
Well, I don't know if you can get Machado just yet. He's signed through next year. He's a free agent after next year. So I don't know. Jerko's a regular player to me. I think he's a fine third baseman. He's one of the best defensive third basemen in the league. He's going to have 20 home runs again. He's going to hit 270. I don't know. I think he's better than a platoon player.
So you would be inclined, the way I'm talking, the way this offense has been, to keep it as it is and just see what happens in 2018? Or do you think they definitely need an impact bat?
They need an impact bat. They need another starting pitcher. They need a closer. They need three things now. Because Rosenthal is certainly, in my mind, lost for the season here. And then next year, if he has to have surgery, which is not out of the question, he's out for next year, too. And that's his sixth year. Then he's gone after that. He'll be a free agent. So, you don't know if he's your guy or not. You have to hope he is the rest of this season. But they now need three things. With Wainwright, no guarantee for anything after this year. I mean, he's got a contract for next year, but he's also got an elbow problem. And then Leak has had two rough finishes in a row here now. He had a bad finish last year when he came back after the shingles attack, and then this year he's lost 11 of his last 13 decisions. That's not good enough, and he's got three more years. So you need three things. You need an impact bat, but maybe that's not now the number one priority anymore. It might be pitching.
Yeah, because of the plethora of pitching problems, Lance Lynn's value to the club has got to be going up.
Well, I would think so. I don't see how they can look at their staff next year and say, let's see, we have Martinez, and we have, because you don't know if Reyes is going to be ready quite at the start of the season. You don't know if Flaherty's going to be ready. You don't know if Wainwright's going to be strong. You don't know what Leak's going to be like. You've got a pretty good idea about Walken. He's part of your rotation, but he's not the top one or two guys. And Lynn is. So I think he has to stay.
Does Dakota Hudson have the ability to close games? And I know you wouldn't want to put a rookie in that role, but I'm looking at the Rockies. They have three rookies in their starting rotation, I believe. Is Dakota have closing possibilities?
I guess so. But I think I'd value him more as a starter. You could work out that closing thing, I think, a little easier than having a guy join your rotation. But it's not something to or dismiss. He hasn't done that in the minor leagues yet, but it's because they want to have those guys build up their innings, build up their arms by pitching. Even if a guy's a reliever, they usually start him in the minor leagues anyway. So I wouldn't rule that out, but I think he's still in their future as a starter.
Good stuff, Kamish. We appreciate it.
Okay, Frank, thank you.
All right, Rick Hummel, the Hall of Famer, joining us on the Hollywood Casino Press Box. Broadcasting live from Whitmore Country Club. Let's take a short time out. We'll be right back.